Podlog Conference 2008, taking place at the Las Vegas Convention Center in Las Vegas, Nevada, on September 19th through the 21st. I'm here with Andrew Jones of Tall Skinny Kiwi. He's going to be interviewed by five of our attendees: Marcus Goodyear of The High Calling, Andy Jackson of SmartChristian.com, Matt Anderson of Mere Orthodoxy, Cynthia Ware of The Digital Sanctuary, and Rhett Smith of RhettSmith.com. Andrew Jones, can you please briefly give just a brief bio of yourself, tell people who you are, what you're going to be talking on?
Yeah, sure. Gosh, it sounds intimidating, all those names and people that I recognize. I hope they are gentle with me. Yes, I'm Andrew Jones, and I'm from New Zealand originally, but spent about a decade in America. My wife is American. I'm a missionary overseas and work as a mission consultant for a number of organizations, including Baptist and Anglican. And I started blogging in the 90s, and most currently my main blog is tallskinnykiwi.com.
And the name of your topic at the God Blog Conference is going to be?
Well, one title came up on the website, and there's another title floating around. But it'll have to do with new media and the Internet and the history of the Christian blogosphere.
Yeah, we're talking about missional church in the Internet age. And let's just go ahead and start the questions off with Andrew Jackson. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, Andy Jackson, smartchristian.com.
Hi, Andy. How are you?
Hey, Andrew. How are you?
Good.
My first question, then we'll get to the real question. Are you ready to co-author a book with me?
Yeah. A book on what?
Well, we'll talk about it.
All right.
First, what I'd like to ask you, Andrew, is in light of all of kind of the new online tech stuff that's happening right now, what do you see for the future role of Christian bloggers? Do you see it declining, or do you see Christian blogging increasing and becoming more mature in its content and addressing really key issues that are going on in the church? How would you see the future of Christian blogging?
Well, I hope it continues in giving some serious content, although I hope it doesn't degenerate down into articles and small writings. I see it diversifying. I think blogging as a platform will obviously continue as more people find it easy to begin self-publishing. But I do see blogging as moving into live streaming, which is having people just become more visible with their own life and find multiple outlets for writing or sending up photos or putting up podcasts or Twittering on just small things about what they're doing, or even writing for, you know, Google Knoll or Wikipedia or other article-based things. So basically people publishing a whole lot more than they're doing right now, but not always falling back on the same blog platform.
Andrew, Cynthia Ware in my
Hi,
blog
Cynthia.
Domain. Hello, good morning. My blog domain is thedigitalsanctuary.org. And Andrew, we just love you. We enjoy your writing, and it's such a delight to see someone express themselves so colorfully and creatively and intellectually, insightfully online, and your work has been a joy to all of us. That's why we're here.
Thank you.
My question is regarding the role of women online, and my emphasis is the study of media and technology being used by the church online. And I have to say, I've been so disappointed at seeing such a dichotomy between the number of men embracing online communication and at least in a broad, non-cloistered way. I mean, women come online and they make these groups of moms and then they all stick together. And I'm a little bewildered by that, because my assumption would be that we would lose a lot of gender divide online and that could serve the church. And I was wondering what your perspective is.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I'm not always sure that I'm seeing the divide. I mean, many times I don't know whether somebody's male or female. It's quite possible that the genre of blog has a lot to do with whether male or female participate in it and do well. I know when it comes to text-based content and writing short blog posts that are punchy and to the point and almost like micro-articles, it seems that men seem to enjoy doing that. Although there are other areas where women seem to excel. I remember back in the 90s there was a movement of flash storytelling where it was very visual based, using flash technology, having images and pictures with just a voiceover, a very effective way of getting storytelling across, but dominated by females and really hardly any men that I came across doing that. So, and again, as blogging, I think, morphs into all kinds of not just different genres, but also different medias, you know, some video, some image, some text, some whatever. There's going to be possibilities for both sexes to join in. I don't know which one will dominate in the future. I'm curious to know what you think on that.
Well, I couldn't concur with you more that blogging is morphing. We know a lot of big-name bloggers are laying down their blogs and picking up status updates, actively Twittering, and actively embracing microblogging in conjunction with maybe writing one lengthy article a week as opposed to one a day. But it's possible that this is related to the church. I just see the role of women somewhat limited, and I can't figure out why, because when it comes to communicating, women usually excel.
Mm.
And it's possible that I'm a latecomer to the game. I certainly missed flash storytelling, but it sounds so good I want to go back to it. But and so maybe I'm just picking up here midstream and have missed some of the good examples of women with blogs about Christianity that have high traffic, good Technorati ranking, etc. I just can't find them.
Yeah, it's a good observation.
Hi, Andrew. This is Marcus Goodyear from thehighcalling.org.
Hi, Marcus.
In some ways, my question is about how to have integrity online, but what you said earlier about live streaming, I think, relates. And so I'm wondering, is there a difference, or maybe what is the difference, between Tall Skinny Kiwi and Andrew Jones?
Oh, well, in my opinion, we're really quite connected, and more so than it used to be in the 90s. In the 1990s, I was CyberRev, which I got in, like, 1995. That email address. And then in 1997, I was CyberRev. And so for 5 or 6 years, I was this virtual kind of person, probably quite different from me. And the switch to Tall Skinny Kiwi was a switch to me in the physical realm. I'm 6'6", and I am quite skinny, too skinny, actually, quite unsuccessful in gaining weight, apparently. And I was born in New Zealand, which is something, I mean, all three things I've actually been quite ashamed of in the past. And in a way, it's me fronting up to these issues and bringing them head on into the screen. So when people meet me face to face, they look at me and they go, aha, no wonder. So I think it's quite real. And it also reflects my attitude to the internet as a diary or as a way to express physically what's going on. I've always tried to be integral. I've always tried to have what's really going on match reality as much as possible. And it used to be my blog didn't look very good, but then sometimes I didn't feel like I wanted a very posh, put-together blog because I didn't feel put together myself. Maybe my bedroom was untidy, and my blog would reflect that, kind of where I was at the time. And I still actually try and change it once a month. Not always the entire look of it, but at least bring in a fresh image of what I'm doing and thinking at the time. So, yeah, I do try and make it integral. And I've encouraged churches in the past to do the same when they put up websites that reflect their aesthetics and maybe the level of excellence that they've already achieved. I think sometimes we overreach in our websites. Sometimes you can come on a website and see something that's just mind-blowing because somebody's got a big budget, but then you turn up to the event or you turn up to the church and it's actually quite nothing at all like what you envisioned, which isn't that honest, and it doesn't do anybody any justice. So yeah, I do believe in integrity, and to see the blog as an overflow of really what's going on.
Andrew, this is Matthew Anderson with MirrorOrthodoxy.com. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. I'm kind of sucked into this idea of live streaming as well. It seems like one of the effects of this movement is that sort of academic or intellectual thoughts are constantly going to be contextualized into the ongoing narrative of a person's life. I'm a little bit curious to hear your thoughts on that, and particularly what some of the downsides are to that we should be careful about avoiding.
Yeah, downsides to leaders maybe being too vulnerable and streaming too much of their life? Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's an interesting parallel going on, too. I mentioned I was a missionary and involved in Christian service. I probably didn't say that most of the ministry I've been involved in the last 15 years has been with very organic, simple models of church. So some of that is house church or churches that meet in coffee shops or churches that even meet online and form cyber communities and then make an effort to find small relational groups to meet around, which is a very different model of church than the stage and the congregation and the man speaking for half an hour who maybe doesn't get any feedback or response. And so I also see the same parallel, I guess, on the internet, where there are some websites where somebody just gives a small article or some thoughts on something, but there's no whole life expression. You know, you know what he's thinking about the theory of the Trinity, but you don't know what he ate for breakfast or what he does for sports or if he has any children or what his hang-ups are or, you know, so the blog, if a blog is holistic, then it's just an outlet for somebody to be a real person in the same way that some of these small relational churches are places for us all to discover ourselves in a very real setting. So, but there is a danger, I think, when leaders begin to blog in being maybe too vulnerable. And when I first started my blog, you know, I didn't really do it for anybody else. I didn't know other people would read it. I didn't know any other Christian bloggers. I was really the only one, so I just said whatever I wanted. But then after a few years, there were a few people reading it, and if I reviewed a book and said I didn't like it, then the author would email me, and he said, could you change your mind? You know, no one's going to buy my book. And I'm not saying I had a big effect on that, but all of a sudden I had to watch what I said, knowing that suddenly it would be visible to really a lot of people. So I think for leaders, we do have to be careful. We just can't say everything that we really want to say all the time. Maybe compared to a 15-year-old who gets a little MySpace or a Bebo or something like that and says, you know, I saw this or I heard that or I went to this church and it was just stupid. You know, we can't get away with that. So, it's tough. You have to be choosy. The other thing I find is that being in ministry, there are some things I really want people praying for me and supporting me to know, but you know, the people down the road or the people involved in my life here on another angle, maybe people that don't know Jesus yet, they probably don't need to know some of those things. And so I do find myself having to divide up my life into compartments, which I wish I hadn't, but it's just reality that there are some things that my best friends need to know and pray for me, and other things that that other people don't know. And sometimes you do have to keep those worlds separate, which I think the move to live streaming will be good, because there won't just be one blog that we just try and put everything up on. We can put different parts of ourselves on different genres and different platforms, and that'll be a good move.
This is Rhett Smith of RhettSmith.com. How you doing?
Yeah.
Finally get to talk to you in person instead of over email.
Yeah, and thanks for your help on my email as well.
Oh, yeah, super excited to see you here this next month. My question is, and I don't have the, you know, I've only been blogging for 5 years, and you have this great perspective, you know, blogging in the mid-90s and early 90s, and I was wondering, it seems like the smaller sections of the church, whether the house church or like a home church or the parts of the church that you're more involved in with the emerging movement or missional movement seem to really embrace technology and blogging and websites. And it seems just now that maybe some of the larger churches or mega churches find it to get around to, you know, blogging or get a website up. It seems like the smaller churches have kind of already moved on to a new technology. And I was just wondering why it seems these smaller groups are so maybe quick to embrace things and the larger churches just take forever, it seems like.
Well, yeah, having said that, I'm sure there's a lot of large churches that are also on the cutting edge of quite a number of technologies.
For
I know
sure.
One or two, you know, that, you know, they've already got services going on in Second Life, and they're, you know, they're really pushing the boundaries. But I think that's a pretty good observation, that the people who often end up in the emerging church, if I can use that word, I hesitate to use it among Americans because I know it gets kind of murky, but that movement does attract entrepreneurs and early adopters and people that perhaps would like to try out new forms or new models of church to see which one might work a little bit better. Obviously, the same mindset is going to be connected to the Internet. If there's a new platform and something offers possibility, then I think there's some of them, and I guess I would include myself in that also, that just have something goes off inside us and we say, yeah, we need to just take this for a run and see what happens and test it out and see what potential it has for the kingdom. What might Jesus want to do with this new technology? We're all quite excited about it. Sometimes we get too giddy. Maybe that's a sign of old age, if we're too infatuated with technologies. But it does attract the same people, you're right. New technology, new social media platforms, and oftentimes new ecclesial models as well. Maybe it's a calling. Some people just need to just try things out, see if they work or not, and they don't mind too much if they don't, because they can always move on and try something else.
At this point, we're going to go ahead and open up the floor to questions, and I would like to go ahead and lead off with the first question, Andrew, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
You've spoken a lot about live streaming on the web, specifically individuals going out and being a kind of witness. How do you see the church as more of a corporate body utilizing web media to share the gospel?
The church is a corporate body.
Whether it be like an individual's church that they themselves attend, you know, that corporate body, or be it a denomination, you know, a sort of scalable model.
Yeah. It all seems to get intertwined on the Internet. It's sometimes really hard to pick out who's doing what. There's denominational models, and mission agencies have theirs, and individuals. They all seem to come together. Emerging Church was mentioned. The number one ranking Emerging Church site in the world is emergingchurch.info, which is sponsored by the Church Mission Society, which is a 208-year-old organization. And yet nobody would really know that. But yet if you look at the heart of it, it comes down to individuals who are maybe just blogging or putting up some thoughts, and those thoughts go into a feed, and the feed pops up on the site, and before you know it, you've got a very old organization pointing to very new things that are popping up, and really a fantastic partnership. So if partnership can happen, if collaboration can happen across the board, I'm excited about it. Churches, organizations, and just individual people. Feel free to come back on me and ask more if that's if I didn't fully answer your question, please.
No, that was a great answer.
This is Andy Jackson. Andrew, I just returned from living 4 months in Turkey.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, and yeah. I, you know, have been traveling there since 1989, been very engaged there. I'm really shocked, and I'm still reflecting a lot on the rise of missional Islam in Turkey, which I think is moving west. And my question would be, how do you see really the new media from a missional point of view, really relating, or I don't want to use the word confronting, but interacting with the reality of Islam's growing advance in Europe and the United States? I mean, we kind of get involved in these new media things, and they can become an end in itself. And I think we talk about church or doing church, but about missional issues, how do you see new media really in the future making an impact?
Yeah, well, you know, I was receiving your updates from Turkey. I didn't know if I should say that on the interview, though, in case it made it to the Internet, knowing the promiscuity of new media and the way things travel quickly. But
well, they have on me.
Well, obviously in Europe it's a big issue, yeah. And in fact I'm teaching missionaries next week. And I won't say the name of the group, but this is another big issue: is the clash with Islam, and how do we do that as followers of Isa? You know, one of the hopes and little bright lights that I'm seeing going on right now is the huge increase of Persian blogs from Iran, Farsi speaking. The Persian blogosphere is one of the more substantial language and country blogospheres in the world, and for some reason the Persians are just totally into anything to do with the Internet, and they have just massive amount of resources, and they're really encouraging that. And at the same time, there's a move of God among Iraqi people, not just there but also around the world. I'm just wondering if that's just one example of what maybe might be going on, the very beginning stages, that the same people that in every country around the world are seeing dreams of Jesus and are starting small groups and are beginning to follow him are also the people who, at least in out of that people group, are the ones most connected to new media and social platforms.
I wonder. I would just follow up and just, we'll get in a long dialogue here, but I think, too, you know, there's a million Iranians living in Turkey right now. And it's very interesting, the non-Arab Persian, and the Turks are extremely engaged in media. I mean, this is becoming a major avenue of our interaction with missional things in Turkey. So the Arab world is a little different, I think. But anyway, in the Persian and Turkish world, I think this certainly, the new media is a real key.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be great to give people a voice, you know, just anybody a voice? Because there are so many fantastic stories going on in those countries, you know, people's dreams and then people finding Christ and
yeah.
Jesus doing miraculous things among them, and yet you don't hear those stories, and quite possibly the new media could be that outlet. It could be just, maybe some housewife had something happen to her. She's given her life to Jesus, her life has changed, and she just wants to get on and say a few words. But when she does that, it's her speaking the language in her culture, and it's just really profound.
Yeah,
and,
I think
we
need to look for new media as it relates to missional issues.
Well, wouldn't it be exciting if just those individual voices could be heard?
Yeah, I agree.
And then they start mounting, and then there's one or two, and then there's 100, and then 1,000. Mm-hmm. It could be really exciting. We had a blogger from Lebanon come to our roundtable in Germany 2 years ago, a young guy following Christ, and he was, through his blog, was able just to share the story of his country and what was going on there. And, you know, not trained in media and not working for any TV company, but just a blogger. He had a connection. He had an internet connection and a computer, and he was away.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Marcus Goodyear with thehighcalling.org. And what you just said about blogs and new media helping individual voices being heard reminded me of the science of emergence, which mm-hmm. I've been thinking about a lot lately because of the Emergent Church and just preparing for this conversation. Do you see any connections between the science of emergence, what's happening with blogs, and that there's something emerging from all of these voices talking, and then how does that relate to the Emergent Church?
Well, I've always seen it as relating very strongly to the Emergent Church, because the emergent theory is something I've got books on and I've enjoyed reading about, and certainly the Bible talks about going to the ant to observe its ways, Proverbs 6:6, as I'm sure you know. And when you look at emergence theory, why actually something does go from chaos to organization in a way where hierarchical control is not brought in, you know, through pattern recognition, then, yeah, the same patterns happen in the emerging church, the same patterns are happening on the internet, and it's the reason why certain blog sites start getting more hits and then more linkage and then more Google credibility. So it's the same thing going on in many different worlds. You know, the word emergence is popping up and has been for the last 5 years in the business communities, biological research, and obviously computer and new media theory, mm-hmm. but also in the church world, because as those principles are played out, we're beginning to see things emerge in a similar manner. So yeah, it's good observation. Although, having said that, there's a lot of people as part of the emerging church movement that really haven't looked into emergence theory and don't really put the two together. For them, it's just kind of a cool word, and they're running with it no matter what.
Yeah, for me, the term emergent church only has meaning in context of the science of emergence because people just redefine it so often.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Yeah, Steve Johnson has a good book called Emergence. And he, one of the opening parts of the book, he quotes Proverbs 6:6, go and observe the ant. You know, it doesn't have, you know, that kind of leadership, and yet, you know, it does all these things. So, fantastic. Yeah. And Marcus, I enjoy the high calling. It's been good to write for you guys a couple of times. I should do that more in the future.
I hope you will.
Andrew, this is Rhett Smith, and my question was, what year did you post your first blog, and how do you stay, I guess, excited every day to get up and maybe, you know, post something, or whether it's every day or a couple times a week?
Yeah. It was either late 97 or it was early 98, and I'm not sure exactly what it was. And there was a blog called Andrew's Tea Salon, and my wife made it. I was in San Francisco. We were working in Haight-Ashbury with street kids, I didn't really have time, and so my wife learned HTML and made this website. And it was just good to just post out a few thoughts, but it was really a one-way conversation. There wasn't any feedback, and the other thing was there wasn't any blogging engines, so you had to write today's date and, you know, and do the whole thing manually from the very beginning. So in 2001, when I discovered Blogger.com, there was this automatic archiving engine that suddenly put a date stamp on it and then tucked it away in a monthly basis. It was just like, wow, it's exactly what I need. And it was so exciting. And, yeah, how have I stuck at it this long? I'm not sure, because I don't normally stick at things this long. But I've always felt God's pleasure in it, and I found it something I should be doing. I really don't know. I have this compulsion to just say some things on the blog and just publish it. I guess I used to have a diary, a spiritual diary, for probably, I don't know, close to two decades. So I'm used to, you know, reading a thought in the Bible or having something to say and just scribbling it down for my own use. And I guess I've transferred that to the internet. It's a place where I can just jot down what's going on for posterity's sake, or maybe it's something that could be valuable to somebody else, and there's this generosity instinct in me that wants to just, you know, give it away or allow other people to have access to it. Also this idea of accountability, that I really want people, some people especially, to know what I'm up to, what I'm thinking, where I am, and probably a small dose of egotism, that I think I'm really important and I have something to say, which is a terrible thing, but God's still working on me, so what can I say?
Well, I could jump in here, Andrew, and say you have been a great blessing in terms of your ability to give us the history of so many of the things that we don't know, as well as have a global perspective, and some of those of us who can't tap into a lot of global traveling, etc., we've enjoyed the snippets of what the world and what the church looks like in other places. And speaking of the history of your blog, I was wondering, just in conjunction with this kind of personal nature of the line of our questioning right now, I was wondering if your family has the same sensibility about your blog. And we know goose is in the oven tonight, and those things are all delightful for us, and I wondered if your family feels the same way, and I wonder if you can disclose any of the hard or bad things that have happened to you, because I know you've been bored with your blog and reinvented it a few times, and we all go through that, and I'm assuming that hard things have happened behind the scenes that we don't know anything about.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah, it's been good occasionally. You know, when we were living in Prague, my daughter developed diabetes, and we had to pay cash for the insulin. We were just in financial trouble, and through the blog, people heard about it and sent money, and you know, we were saved. So we're really thankful. The family's thankful for just the communication through the blog, and it's been fun for them occasionally to see their face up there when they've done something worthy of it. One of my daughters started a blog, and she just gets so disappointed when she doesn't get any comments. And on the other hand, the negative side is that sometimes it has really sucked me in, and it can be very addicting, especially when you find yourself in a big swarm of controversy or interest, and everybody's commenting, and you're reading their comments and coming back on it, when you close the computer and walk away, you just think, gosh, there's probably a few more comments on there right now. Maybe I should just go back and take another look. And then the next thing you know, 2 or 3 hours has gone by, and it's, maybe it's the evening. Your kids have just, you know, had dinner and watched TV. And so it's been very intrusive over the years with my family, and I've had to discipline myself and allowed my wife to put some borders around my blogging. So, for instance, I don't blog in the evenings when the kids are home from school, and I don't blog on Sundays as a general rule. I'm not saying I've lived up to that. I'm not saying there haven't been a few moments when the wife stepped out and I've sneaked over to the computer and just seen what's going on. But without those borders there, I think it may have actually done damage to my family, so I'm very thankful for those. So, yeah, it's a wonderful gift, and I know my mother in Australia is delighted every time I put up photos of the kids. And my father in his nursing home right before his death used to have my blog read aloud to him. And it's kept us, we gave up our home to come overseas as missionaries, but it's enabled us to stay connected and yet at the same time. It's always had the potential to do a lot of damage, and we've always been very aware of that. So thank you for asking.
Andrew, I know that you have been compiling a book for a long time, your own work, to write a book. And I want to hear about that.
Yeah. Oh, it's one of my biggest failures in my entire life. I haven't published this stinking book, and it's been 10 years coming. But you know, I've had some people, you know, really come down on me, say, Andrew, you said you were going to publish it by now, and it's not here. And I've had other people saying, well, you know, you blogged it, you didn't write it in a book form. And I think that's partly correct as well. One of the things is when you blog a lot, you have a thought and you think, yeah, I need to blog it. You shape it and you write it and you publish it. And when you publish it, it's gone and you feel this wonderful sense of relief. And then people start coming back at you the same day. By the end of the day, there's all these comments and all this response, and then other people are quoting it and it's popping up around the internet. It's a real buzz. But you don't have the desire to go back and make it into a book. You think, well, I could put it in a book, and then it might get released in 18 months' time. And, you know, you're only going to sell a few thousand of them. But, you know, you put a blog post, you get feedback immediately, and you might have all those thousands really, really quickly. And so it's been hard for me to write a book. But on the other hand, I am actually putting my things down right now into a book form. So I'm hoping very soon. To have something come out. But it has been this blog versus book fight going on inside of me for quite a number of years, and I'm not sure if anyone in the room right now has that same struggle. I know, Cynthia, we wrote together, didn't we, on the Wikplesia book?
Yes, correct.
So I have got a number of chapters out. Maybe that's the best I can do, or maybe I need somebody to pull those chapters into a book for me. I don't know.
Andrew, this is Rhett Smith, and I guess my question is about the book, and I think all of us would like to publish a book and, you know, make some money off it, but I'm actually wondering about the future of books and publishing. Are we going to see a time when people just aren't really publishing a book, or they aren't going to sell it in that way? They're gonna, I guess, more or less just give it away for free on the Internet.
I would see both. I think books will be PDF forms. They'll be downloadable for nothing. But at the same time, there's always a need for something on paper that you can bring with you into the toilet. At least that's what I like to do. I've just got myself an old printing press, and I'm going to try and make really nice quality books. So I'm not impressed with the really quick print-to-demand, cheap paper books that we can get done quite quickly. I'd much rather have something very instant, very free, very now on the Internet, and at the same time, have something that feels good to hold and smells nice when you open it, and just, you know, I kind of like the both extremes, but I don't really like the middle ground very much. But there'll be both. There'll be books, and obviously there'll be information online in all kinds of forms.
This is Andy. I just hopefully have one more. I've just been throwing something around in my mind recently, an idea. I started a Christian Bloggers Network. I think after GodBlogCon last year, and I think there's 650 bloggers now that have joined that.
Yeah, I'm one of them, Andy. I joined as well.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to give, you know, a lot of people have blog roles, which I think are kind of out of date, and everyone chooses who they want to be on their blog role, but there's a lot of bloggers out there that I don't think are getting exposed. But one of the things that came out from this was that I'm just kind of, you know, when you blog, it's out there for a day or two, and sometimes people put hours into a post, and it's often linked to a number of things. And then it goes into this long archive, as you were mentioning, and it's basically lost. It's like a library that's hidden.
Yep.
And I'm wondering, my idea right now is to think about something called, like, AskChristianBloggers.com, where anybody can do ask a question, like let's say you have this whole resource of bloggers, and say, you know, I'm interested in this topic. And then bloggers can respond by giving a link to a post they might have done 2 years ago on that topic.
Oh, yeah.
And that would generate traffic to people's blogs, but it also could be a source for people that are just interested. Maybe it's a pastor doing a sermon, or somebody that wants to write something, or even somebody that's going to write a new post, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking about, what is your thought about that?
I love the idea. The hierarchies on the Internet are quite extreme sometimes. It's not flat, as Friedman said, at all. And, you know, once you get a whole lot of permanent links and you get a whole lot of hits and a little bit of history, then the law of preferential attachment means that, you know, to him who has, much more will be given, and you end up becoming, you know, the equivalent of a megachurch very quickly. What that does, though, that hierarchy, is it excludes just so many people that maybe don't have the links or don't have the history. And we really need to get those voices out. And I've had a real heart for that for many years.
Yeah, and the other thing I think is that a lot of bloggers have a lot of material, a lot of posts.
Yeah.
But and I think they should be giving it, and not just, well, if you come to my site, you can read my post.
No. But, well, yeah, I think they really want to give it. Sometimes
yeah.
it gets buried, as you say. Sometimes it's helpful to have, you know, here's my 10 most popular posts
yeah.
you know, on the page. But it's also helpful just to have other people point to it and send people out to it. I started a Christian blog, a kind of a group communal blog back in 2002 called A Kingdom Space. We had 40 bloggers on it. It may actually be the first Christian group blog. I'm not sure. But the goal was that it was to find those bloggers that could maybe come on to this one blog and say something. People from third world countries, people from countries that maybe didn't have as big a voice as those in the West. And we ended up quite quickly with 40 bloggers, but they were generally mostly from Western countries. And we ran it for a couple of years, and you'll recognize Johnny Baker, a few other people like that, who actually their very first blog post was on this particular blog, and then they went on to start their own blogs, which are all quite well known right now. But it failed in that it stayed Western. It never really, we didn't get the Indian bloggers, didn't get the Chinese. I guess it was mainly in the English language. But I love the idea of pointing to other people and shifting the traffic to other voices that need to be heard above our own. I love it. So anyway, I wish you all the best in that.
Well, thank you, Andrew Jones of the Tall Skinny Kiwi. I look forward to hearing your discussion at the Missional Church in the Internet Age at a God Blog Con. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Dustin. Great to be here, and I look forward to coming to Las Vegas and seeing you all in person, really.
God Blog Con 2008 is taking place at the Las Vegas Convention Center on September 19th to the 21st. You can register at godblogcon.com. Reminder, prices are going up on August 22nd, so get on to www.godblogcon.com to register today. For God Blog Con, this has been Andrew Jackson of smartchristian.com, Red Smith of redsmith.com, Cynthia Ware of thedigitalsanctuary.org, Matthew Anderson of mereorthodoxy.com, and Marcus Goodyear of The High Calling, interviewing Andrew Jones of Tall Skinny Kiwi. I'm Dustin Stevie, Senior Director of God Blog Con. Thank you for listening.